All right, good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
I wanted to wish you a... When does the school year end?
June 6th.
June 6th. All right, so maybe our last time. If I could squeeze one in again, I will. We'll see what's happening. So about popular demand, I was asked to speak this afternoon about Shabbat. What really is Shabbat? Shabbos all about? Obviously, we read about it. One of the centerpieces of the Aseret Dibrot, Zachor Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho, Shamor Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. Shabbat really is one of the essences of Jewish life, makes us unique. What's the holiest day of the year? Shabbat, correct. You know, the world thinks it's Yom Kippur, but it's not. The holiest day of the year comes every week, once a week, the seventh day of the week. It's borne out by the number of aliyot that you have. Shabbat has seven, Yom Kippur has six. So you see, as you ascend in Kedusha, the more aliyot for Kriyat HaTorah. So what is it about Shabbat? How do we understand all the myriad laws of Shabbat? So in fact, all cultures have a day of rest. It goes back to ancient times. One of the interesting phenomena about the Torah is that the Torah really instituted a seven-day week. That is almost universal in mankind since the very beginning. I remember reading many, many years ago that there was an area in China thousands of years ago that had a 10-day week, all right? But people wound up working too hard, I guess. They changed it to seven. The seven-day work week goes back to the first parak in the Torah. And the idea of a seven-day week with one day of rest really is in the world understood as a day of leisure, a day in which you can do what you want, you can reinvigorate yourselves, recapture some of your energy. But in fact, it's the Jews who introduced Shabbat to the world, not so much as a day of rest. I mean, Shabbat is a busy day. For me, as a rabbi, it was always the busiest day of the week. Wasn't really a day of rest. But it's known generally as an institution that has the most complex laws one can imagine, especially restrictions. If you look at the Chafetz Chaim's introduction to Hilchot Shabbat in the Mishnah Berura, so he writes there that it's impossible for a person to be Shomer Shabbat properly, unless you intensely study the laws of Shabbat. You can't just meander your way through Shabbos. You have to know what to do and what you can't do. And even inadvertent violations of Shabbat carry a cost, because it means that there's something missing in a person's appreciation of Shabbat and what it's supposed to mean. So all these details give rise really to two different, perspectives on Shabbat. One perspective to which we can easily adjust and accommodate, and one to which it makes it a little more difficult for people to adjust or accommodate. What's difficult? It's obviously the restrictions. And when the restrictions of Shabbat, the Malachot, oh, thank you very much, are perceived as... when the restrictions of Shabbat are perceived as a burden and as overwhelming, then Shabbat becomes a very dark and foreboding day, and it's difficult for people to accept. Yeah, we speak of the difficulties in the modern world, but as I think I mentioned once before, the modern world changes every generation, thinks of the modern world. So what's the big deal today? The big deal is iPhones and texting and YouTube and everything else. If people are attached to their phones, so all right, many people struggle keeping their phones out of davening, which is itself an avla of a certain sort. But even Shabbat, so that has given rise in our day to the expression half Shabbat, all right? Half Shabbat, meaning they observe Shabbat halfway, except for that, because since texting has become a form of communication, instead of speaking, you text, so therefore it's no different than anything else. Of course, half Shabbat is sort of a misnomer, if not actually an oxymoron. reminds me of two people I encountered over the years. Both said they're Shomer Shabbat, but not in a traditional sense. One guy says he's Shomer Shabbat, but not all of Shabbat. All right, meaning when he's not Michalel Shabbat, he's Shomer Shabbat. And someone else said to me, he's Shomer Shabbat, but not every Shabbat. Meaning, comes and goes. If he can, yes. If not, not. But look, that's just the modern iteration of it. The fact is, previous generations, just in so-called modern times, struggled with a car on Shabbat, or telephone, or television, or radio, or shopping, or any type of gadget that existed at a certain point. It was always considered new, and therefore we had to understand how the new technology, whether it was the wheel or an iPhone, factored into Shmirat Shabbat. But it becomes difficult. You know, in one of the classic expressions of it, people thought, what work? You know, what's the work in turning on a light? What's the work in turning on a television? And you enjoy it as well. There's Onig Shabbat involved. The details, the extent of the prohibitions on Shabbat is actually infinite. And it keeps growing. I see you have that 4-volume set of Rabbi Ribiat on Hilchot Shabbat. So he has tens of thousands of details. But even he would admit that as of now, even that's not comprehensive. Because so many new areas come up in each melacha of Shabbat, each of the 39, you're going to have variations in every particular generation. So that's something that's a little more difficult to accept or understand or accommodate. Of course, there's an aspect of Shabbat that's very easy to accommodate. In fact, it's quite uplifting. Shabbat is a redemptive day. It's a release from the pressures, the rat race of the week. It's revivifying. It's a day of light, of brightness, a day people look forward to, a day of the family, a day of exercising our souls. It's a day that is so important that in Jewish life we count up to it. As we know, the days of the week have no names, they have numbers. Hayom Yom Chamishi LeShabbat. Today's the fifth day of the week, counting up to Shabbat. That's how we count. We count with numbers because the climax of the week is Shabbat. And we set aside Shabbat for special observances. As the halacha dictates, you're supposed to have something special, a manah, a type of food, certainly big day Shabbat. We have special clothing that we wear only on Shabbat. We have shalote hiluchacha shel chol, hiluchacha shel Shabbat, shalote diburcha shel Shabbat, kidiburcha shel chol. We walk differently, we talk differently, we act differently. And the story the Gemara in Shabbat tells, I think everyone hears as a child, maybe even in kindergarten, about Yosef Mokir Shabbat. There's a Jew, Yosef. He was always Mokir Shabbat. He honored Shabbat because if he would see something during the week, buy it, fish, whatever, he would say. He said, Harei zo mana l'Shabbat. This I'm going to save for Shabbat. And in fact, it's even beyond that because that's a din in Friday night, but it's another din in Shabbat morning. We should have some special manah l'Shabbat just for Shabbat morning as well. So you have these two almost bookends of Shabbat or two themes that course through Shabbat. One that unfortunately people perceive as negative and overbearing, and the other is very positive and uplifting. And there's no doubt that you see it carried out in the Jewish world today. I mean, there are Jews outside Orthodoxy who ostensibly honor Shabbat, but they honor the second vision of Shabbat, its redemptive, reviving nature. But without the laws of Shabbat, it begins to wane and enervate as it has, and people start doing things that they enjoy. On the other hand, you can have people who are so ensconced in the laws of Shabbat that they fail to look up and see the brightness, the joy. And, you know, there are homes I've known that operate according to those lamentable principles, that the parents become so didactic in the laws of Shabbat, especially with young children, that the children grow up seeing Shabbat as oppressive. And when they come of age, they want nothing of it. So how do we understand what is Shabbat? Why does it exist? Why is it really defined in terms of restrictions? And why, in fact, is the defining characteristic of a Jew, we say of someone, he's a Shomer Shabbat? Once you say Shomer Shabbat, you don't know everything, but at least that is a yardstick by which we can measure people. It's a halachic yardstick in terms of ne'emonut, credibility in other areas, in terms of being a witness or testifying of the kashrut of something. It's as if one who observes Shabbat can be trusted to observe all the mitzvot. All right, so why in fact is that? I look at the text of Kiddush that we recite at the end of the sixth day, Vayevar Avoka Yom HaShishi. At the end of the sixth day, act of creation finished. So Vayechal, God ceased, God stopped. Meaning, what happened in that demarcation between the end of Friday and the beginning of Shabbat? So that is when God implemented the laws of nature, finalized them. Yes.
Wait, when it says Vayechal, is that related to the word Chel? So like it's some kind of division?
No, Vayechal's with a Chaf and Chel's with a Chet. But right. Vayechal means like Kala, end, right. Ceased. Okay? Vayechulu, Hashemayim, Va'aretz v'chol tzvam. That active creation ceased. Meaning, the Torah holds that creation was fluid. The first 6 days of creation were fluid. The laws of nature were not fixed until the end of the sixth day. That's why, for example, I mean, the strange phenomenon that people should question, not that we can answer it, but the Torah says, Vayev Ravoka Yom Echad, right? But we define day and night by the sun and the moon. But the sun and the moon, or the sun, but the sun was not created till the fourth day. So how does it all work out? So you see, the laws of nature, as well as nature itself, were fluid, were in flux until Shabbat came. Then, we say this in the text of the Birkat HaLevana, Chok Uzman Natan Lahem Shelo Yishano Tafkidam. God decreed for each a specific law, time, function, Shelo Yishano, it can't change. And since then, nature really is on cruise control, since that particular point in creation. Bot Shabbat, bot Minucha, Chazal say. When Shabbat came, Minucha came with it, rest. But it doesn't mean rest, because God's not resting. Rest means finality, a cessation, that the laws of nature then became fixed. All right, there are Nisim, that's a separate discussion, but you know, I'm sure you've heard even this year, the Rambam holds that Nisim were implanted into creation. That's the Mishnah in Avot, Erev Shabbat, Bein HaShemashot. And all these things that eventually would be needed, but the Rambam extends it not just to those items mentioned in the Mishnah, but to other miracles. It was programmed into creation. This Red Sea should split on the seventh day of Pesach when the Jews needed it, v'chulei. Bas Shabbat, bat Menucha. Shabbat came, there's harmony. There's a unity in creation. So vayivarech Elokim et Yom HaShvi'i. God blessed it. And he sanctified it as well. So Shabbat is a day of blessing. Shabbat is a day of sanctification. Tachlit maaseh bereishit, we say elsewhere. It's the very purpose of creation. Creation would have no purpose at all but for the existence of Shabbat. So what is that tachlit? What is the goal? Well, what is the goal of Shabbat? There's really one goal, and that's recognition of God. That's the goal. And to some extent, all mitzvot are like that. But here you have an entire day with numerous types of laws and observances that are designed to enable us to recognize, to acknowledge God in a very substantive way. In effect, Shabbat is the anniversary, annually, weekly celebrated, the anniversary of the day that God created the world, implemented the laws of nature. Shabbat is our day par excellence of acknowledgement of God as the creator of the world. So how do we acknowledge it? We acknowledge it by refraining from physical activity. And I call to your attention this book that I bought when I was your age. I got it in Israel, called the Sabbath by Diane Grunfeld. Diane Grunfeld was a Dayan in London of the Hirshian school. He was a Yeki, and Rav Hirsch, you certainly should look at his commentary in the Chumash as well as in Chorev, what he says about Shabbat. Dan Grunfeld based it on Rav Hirsch. But look at it, both in at the very beginning in Breishit and on Zachar Demashavah LeKadsho, and later on, or even in Kitiso. Look what Rav Hirsch says. And what he has is a thematic presentation of Shabbat and how everything fits into that scheme. So what do we have? How do we refrain? The two ways. Bayom HaShvi'i Tishbot. That we rest, we cease activity on the seventh day. That is a positive commandment. Mitzvah Taseh. Cessation produces a positive entity. So note the distinction. You have in Shabbat, in Melechat Shabbat, these two different categories. One is an Aseh and one is a Lav, a Lo Taseh. There's an Aseh of Tishbot, of ceasing productive activity. And then there's a Lav, Lo Taseh Kol Melacha. They're both in the Dibra. Do not do any labor. What is a Melacha? So again, you come now to the error that people make. A Melacha is not work. It doesn't mean you can't do your job. Although, in most cases it will. A melacha is a purposeful, constructive activity. Look at the etymology. What word similar to melacha? Malach, exactly. What's a malach? An angel. An angel is a created being, Bakadosh Baruch Hu, that's assigned a specific task. Specific task. A melacha is an activity that we do that's purposeful, that's constructive. It's a physically creative act. And on Shabbat, we abstain from these physically creative acts. So it's not a question of work. Heavy lifting is allowed. If you wanted to take this table on Shabbat and move it from that corner to that corner and do it 50 times, there's no issue on Shabbat. You may tire yourself out, but it's not considered a malacha, as opposed to flicking a switch. That would be considered a malacha, because that genders a creative act on the part of man. What's the problem? The problem is, the essence of melacha is that it's an act which shows man's mastery over the world by the constructive exercise of our intelligence and skill. And that's what we can't do on Shabbat. We cannot show our mastery over the world in a variety of ways on Shabbat. So that's why melacha is defined by the 39 categories of labor that existed in the Mishkan. The Mishkan, all 39, I'll be precise, the first 38, were all, it encompassed all the various constructive labors that human beings can do in one form or another with all different types of material. So, too, the place included therein, in those 39, every type of constructive endeavor. One stands out, of course, because not a constructive labor, which is that? Anybody? No. Which melacha stands out as not being a constructive labor? What'd you say? Hotzah's correct. I thought you said Betzalel. Hotzah, correct. Yeah. Hotzah, because you're not...
Betzalel, we're not allowed to...
yeah, right. So Hotzah, carrying, is not part of that same genre. But we'll get back to that in a few moments. Why Hotzah? So in effect, for 6 days, man is a partner in creation. All right? What does we say at the end of Kiddush? Mikol melachto asher asa. What's the specific words I was aiming at? I don't have it here. Asher bara elokim la'asot. That's what I wanted. Bara elokim should be the end. La'asot means to do. To do what? Means the continued activity in creation. La'asot is what makes us partners in creation with God. Not junior partners, of course, but nonetheless, partners. What does the Torah teach us? That's v'chifshuha. That man is obligated to go out and conquer the world, discover new things, settle the world, improve life, etc. But v'chifshuha is the mandate for 6 days of the week. On the seventh day, there's no v'chifshuha. Then we step back and we acknowledge our junior partner status. So for 6 days, we are charged with taking the physical and making it holy, finding some constructive use for it. On the seventh day, we're charged with making time holy, because time is a different entity altogether, also a gift from God, to refrain from any type of physical creativity, and to remember, in fact, to ponder why God placed us here. in effect, we abandon the means of v'chivshuha and instead contemplate the ends of v'chivshuha. What does God exactly want from us? And if you think about it, that's a great gift. The Gemara says in Shabbat, I think it's Daf Yud Amud Bet, that God said to Moshe, Matana Tova Yeshli Bevekin Ozai, I have a great gift, a wonderful gift in my storehouse. I want to give to the Jewish people, V'Shabbat Shema. Its name is Shabbat. Bless you. And there's no doubt that people observe Shabbat, aside from other maladies that may exist, they're just more happy, contemplative people. Family life is itself bettered. The very idea people could sit around the table with parents, with siblings, with relatives, with friends, etc., and not be involved in any of the inanities of the world, but focus on ends, on objectives, on purposes, so that itself is a great gift. So, of course, people find it difficult to accept because of their misunderstanding of what it is. We have to understand, we have to explain that two different approaches. There's the halacha of Shabbat, and then there's the hashkaf of Shabbat. And of course they're conflated, they're intertwined. If we ask about a particular action, is it permissible or not? So halacha will say it's either permissible or impermissible because it falls into a defined halachic category or one of its derivatives, the malacha, the toladah, the Yisrei Derabanan, etc. It falls into a particular category. But that's the halacha. There's a hashkaf of Shabbat that says that things become asur because it necessitates involvement in the physical world, in the created world, in man's world. Shabbat is a day of removal from man's world, and therefore even social interactions are limited. How are social interactions limited? Through Hotzah. And that's why Hotzah stands out, because it's not creative, but rather on Shabbat we have to recognize that we're living in God's world. If we had the ability to go anywhere, walk anywhere, carry anything anywhere, then we feel a sense of ba'alut over the world, over the social world. Even from that we retreat on Shabbat. What's our social world? Sure, it's defined by the meals of Shabbat, by tefillah, by Talmud Torah, by the shul, the Beit Midrash, etc. So that we accept. But beyond that, if we wanted to exercise dominion over the social world, that's what caring does. I take this and I bring it to you. You take that, bring it to me. I go anywhere that I want. From that we also retreat on Shabbat. One of the beauties of the Sabbath of Dan Grunfeld is that he goes into every melacha, it discusses the categories, and then he'll discuss the philosophy in a very simple way, meaning how the particulars of that melacha will run afoul of the goals and objectives of Shabbat. So just to take a specific example, which has so many, many ramifications today, Lamed Vav, Category 36, kindling a fire. Okay? Hadlaka, that's a lav. Any activity which initiates or prolongs combustion or similar light and heat-producing processes. And it says, Melachot, fire production by any means, lighting one light from another, poking a fire, smoking a cigarette, starting or driving a motor car, using the telephone, etc. Gzerot, reading alone by lamplight, moving a lighted lamp or candle. And he goes on, and he says like this, it is hoped that by now, toward the end of the book, enough will have been said to leave no room for the foolish argument, nothing personal, by the way, so often heard in conversation about this malacha, to the effect that this was all very well in the olden days, when kindling a fire meant hard work, knocking heavy stones together and so on. But it cannot be meant to apply at the present day. This is so obviously based on ignorance of the Sabbath idea that it hardly needs refuting. Oh, you may like this. Incidentally, its use reveals the user to be as ignorant of the history of civilization as of the basic principles of the Sabbath. The method of kindling fire in use in Egypt at the time of the Exodus was based on the principle of the tinderbox and involved hardly more effort than striking a match. Okay. In reality, of course, this in particular, its modern form is one of the most fundamental and characteristic of all melachot, since it is the key to man's control of nature. It is fitting that many of the modern trappings of civilization, such as electric light, telephone, radio, etc., involving the closing of the electric circuit, should fall under this heading. By keeping us from this type of activity on the Sabbath, the Torah wishes to dig out from us the very roots of melacha. Dan Grunfeld published this in 1956. Okay, long before he could contemplate the computer, an iPhone, etc. What typifies the misconception of Shabbat? So I remember Rabbi Chase, one of the first essays that I saw when I came to the yeshiva, he quoted from Max DeMont, who's a Finnish-American Jew. He died in the 90s, born in 1912, and he became a popular historian. In fact, he wrote one of the first popular histories of the Jewish people called Jews, God, and History, or something in that order. It was God, Jews. I think it was Jews, God, and History. And he wrote there, he explained how the academies in Bavel worked. And he said as follows, this is a typical question, a case that would arrive in Babylon. And he spoke about what would God want in a particular case. And he mentioned this issue, he wasn't Orthodox, of driving to shul on Shabbat. What would God want? Does God want to increase attendance in shul or not increase attendance in shul or at a shir? So of course, he said, the academies would have permitted it because that is the process of halachic decision making. Of course, this is insane.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, this is like just the...
Yes, he's not a Talmud Chacham, he's not even religious. But he's a popular... It's a popular history. You'd be surprised, it's a bestseller. You'd be surprised how many people, how Jews influence this way. And that's why reading this book led so many Jews astray. God's will relates to us in one way, through the universal halachic categories that he gave us, through the Tariq Mitzvah. Not trying to ascertain some type of will that transcends the Tariq Mitzvot. We relate to God through mitzvot, hence Kabbalat Torah, which is the essence of Shavuot. But you see, the mentality that he has is the common mentality amongst many Jews, and that's where they have absolutely no understanding of Shabbat at all. You see now why it's a fundamental mitzvah. And we define Jews as Shomrei Shabbat, not Shomrei Shabbat. A person who's a kofer b'Shabbat, a denier, mechalel Shabbat, meaning he denies the existence of God. If you violate Shabbat intentionally, what you're saying basically is God is not the creator. He did not create man. He did not give man a set of laws and morality by which to live. He's uninvolved in the world. A Jew who posits that is a kofer. A non-Jew posits that is just separate from the thinking pious people, even of the Bnei Noach. Asking if a person observe all the laws of Shabbat because he likes it, yeah, that's like any mitzvah, all right? You put on tefillin because you think you're going to be successful in business that day. That's a flaw in the kavanah that a person has, but it's not going to undermine the fulfillment of the mitzvah. As opposed to a person, this is what I thought you were asking, who observes Shabbat punctiliously, but finds an overbearing day. So this is, the price I have to pay. This is what God wants from me, but I hate it. I can't wait for it to end. So that, it's flawed conceptually and ideologically. It's not necessarily flawed halachically. I mean, he's observing the halacha, but he gets nothing out of it. And I don't know, for me, but hard to sustain such a mentality for long. Yes? No, not anymore, because there's no credible halachic source that doesn't find in use of electricity, at least in Issa Rabbanon. So a person used it, did that, it would not be defined as a Shomer Shabbat, but that you seek appropriate halachic guidance. Yeah. No, but there's no one today I heard of who holds that it's not at least Issa Rabbanon. Well, you know such people. Stand up and present yourselves! No, I'm kidding. Usually the disputes are whether something is asur midrabanan or asur midaraita. But you do have cases where someone says something. It's rare. A It's heter gomor versus also the right. You have that on occasion.
Like certain things with how good an heir is. Like one person can hold, let's say, the like the heir is most people, let's say,
no right. So heir is going to be a little different. Right. So heir is going to be a little different. I hear you. Yes, that's correct. So heir is going to be different because, again, it's not a constructive labor. So then you're not questioning the existence of Eruv. That would make someone a Tzedoki, the Gemara says. But you're existing, how are you going to create a Rishud HaYachid out of something which is a Carmelit? It's a different question.
Right.
But again, think back to the difference in kind between the Malach of Otzah, which you call Bezalel, and the other 38 Malachah. The difference in kind. So there you're not talking about the Malach itself. You're talking about everyone agrees on the Malachah. But you're talking about the specifics of whether or not something's a Rishud HaYachid. You could argue. I hear you. So you could say, I consider Rishud HaYachid, Rishud Arabim, Carmelit, Makom Ptur. You could say all these things. But that'll be a legitimate distinction. But you're not arguing on the essential malacha. You're not saying this is or isn't a malacha. You're saying whether malacha applies in a certain context. And by the way, that's going to apply to many, many different areas, starting with Choresh and Zareya. Okay? You take a broom and you sweep. Is that allowed? Well, classically, it was not allowed because the floors were made of dust. All right, there weren't hard surface floors. So even sweeping was asur. But then, no, now we have hard floors. Are we going to apply a fear of a shavye gumo to a hardened floor where it's not at all relevant? Reasonable people can differ. Most today say that it's not going to be asur. But nonetheless, then you have to dig deep into the details and see which is going to qualify and what's not going to qualify. So therefore, if a person has a legitimate halachic view, I wouldn't say that person is a mechalal Shabbat. So let's say someone said an Erev is good, all right? And someone said it's not, and the person who said it's good, others rely on him, I would not say such a person is mechalal Shabbat. You have this all over America. I grew up with this in Muncie. You have this in Flatbush until today, in Borough Park until today. Are there people, I know there's shuls that won't allow someone holds from the Erev to get an Ali, etc. A little extreme to me, but teacher's own. Yes.
I would argue, Tanaruf brings out a point that you should like make your bed on Shabbat. In other words,
Kavod HaBriyot.
Yeah, it's called Kavod HaBriyot.
You'll make a good husband. You should sweep on Shabbat, you'll make a very good husband someday. Okay.
Right.
All right. Now, there are two aspects of Shabbat, each defined by the different Dibra. One in Yitro, one in Vatchanan. So what is saying in Yitro? What's the theme of Shabbat in Yitro? Zachar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Why? Because Sheshet Yomim. I'm sorry. Because 6 days God created the world and then he stopped. So meaning you have in Yitro, in the first rendition of the Dibrot, you have Shabbat as Zikaron L'Masa Breishit, as we say in Kiddush. Zikah Masabration, it's a remembrance of creation. But there's another aspect of Shabbat, and that's also in Kiddush, which is what? Zecher Litziat Mitzrayim. Because in the Dibrot in Vatchanan, there it says not creation, but it says V'zacharta ki eved hayita Beretz Mitzrayim. You'll remember, not that God created the world, you remember you were slaves in Egypt, and God took you out of Egypt, etc. You have both. The Dibrot have the same breakdown as we have in Kiddush and vice versa. Because one speaks of creation, one speaks of Egypt, so you have both reflected in Kiddush as well. What's v'zacharta k'evad ha'yita b'eretz Mitzrayim? So that is an acknowledgement that God is the master of the human world as well as master over the created world. I mean, he created the world. So that's Bayom HaShviti Tishbot. But he is also the master over the human world, which is the master over the social order. And what Malacha then engenders our submission to the God, to God's mastery over the social order, that is Hotzah. So Yetziat Mitzrayim was a redemption from bondage, from subjugation. Even slaves now can rest on Shabbat Man cannot dominate another person on Shabbat. So even if 6 days a week you have people work for you, Leman Yanuach, we say this actually in the first Dibra too, but it's worth reiterating. Who rests on Shabbat? Lo sasiko melacha, ato vincho vitecha, avdecho vamatcha, uvemtecha. So your servant and your maidservant, that's in Yitro, also have to rest. But it's elaborated on in the second Dibrot in Vodchanan, because there the Torah makes quite clear, Vizocharto ki ever hid Mitzrayim, Vizoch Hashem lekecha mishom biyad chazak v'zunto ya, kein tzim Hashem lekecha l'sar yom ha-shabbat. And they have as well, yom ha-shvi shabbat l'shem lekecha, l'tazak b'cha ad v'inchu v'zecha, v'avdecha v'amadcha v'sharcha, v'chavecha b'mtecha. V'gecha l'man yanuach avdecha v'amatecha kamocha. So there it's even repeated, l'man yanuach avdecha v'amadcha. The purpose that your servant and maidservant should rest. Because there's no greater acceptance of God's mastery over the social order than for people to stand back and say, I cannot order, subjugate another human being on Shabbat. How does this work out with having your maid or butler or valet working for you on Shabbat? All right, it's a problem. I guess you'd say that they're not really doing any malacha necessarily, but nonetheless, we should try to refrain as best we can from acts of subjugation over Shabbat. What does Shabbat do then? It's a restoration of human dignity. Before Hashem, we all stand equal. And if those inequalities surface during the week, on Shabbat we step back. And just like we cannot do any malacha, neither can our Eved or Ama, and not even our Behemot, our Shor and Chamor. We are masters over nothing except our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what then are the benefits of Shabbat as we understand them? Well, it's a constant reminder to us, a weekly reminder of why we're alive, why God put us here, and what God expects for us. So therefore, in order to underscore the uniqueness of Shabbat, it has to be a different day. A different day, meaning different altogether in dress, in deportment, in activity. Like I mentioned earlier, the way we walk, the way we talk. It's not just whether or not we observe Shabbat, it's a question of how. If a person longs for Motzei Shabbat, meaning he can't wait for Havdalah, then, Havdalah is the highlight of the week, then there's a serious problem, because that's not really Shabbat. The Rav told a story. It's been written up in a few places, but he wrote in a book. He said there was a guy, I think his name was Yankel the Porter, I forget the Yiddish. During the week, the Rav met him when he was in Warsaw. The guy was a porter. He schlepped the schlepper. That's what they did. I remember once, I was young, I was on a cruise with my parents, and we got off in Marseille, and the porters there had this strap to which, in our case, a guy attached 7 suitcases to the strap, slung them over his shoulder, and just walked wherever he had to go. That's the job of the longshoreman, of the porter. So it's back-breaking work. So he knew a guy, his uncle, the porter. The Rav says that one Shabbat afternoon, he was looking for an early Mairiv, and he stumbled into the wrong place. The Majlis HaShtibel in Warsaw. You heard of the Majlis HaRebbe? No? Musician? Mizmor LeDavid. It's one of his compositions. Anyway, they sang late into the night. So the Rav sat down he was a young man at the time, must be in his 20s. He sat down and he asked the guy wearing a long but tattered kapata, when is Mairiv here? And then he realized it was Yankel the porter, who during the week dressed in rags. And on Shabbat, he was wearing this kapot, which now was very old and tattered. But this guy, the porter, turned to him and said to him, young man, is there something so worthwhile in the week that's waiting for you that you want Shabbat to end? That's a Jewish mentality. To long for the end of Shabbat, to take away that closeness with God, so that itself is its own problem. Shabbat is a different day. We have to always act differently on Shabbat. When I lived in Teaneck, every year I would host the B'nai Mitzvah of that year at my house for a basketball game. We would play. I would always make sure I would win, but that's a separate point. And then I give them a little talk, and it was always the same talk every year about playing ball on Shabbat, which was always, you know, it's the vice of Jewish youth from time immemorial. And all right, halachically, it's probably improper. There are ways you could justify it too. But I said to them like this. I said, what concerns me most is the following. If you play ball on Shabbat, and then you play ball on Sunday, what's the difference between Shabbat and Sunday? There's no difference. You're doing the same thing. That's a problem. Because Shabbat has to be different in everything that you do. It can't, certainly in secular things. It has to be different. If you just make Shabbat a day of rest, sleep, reading novels, etc., then it's a different day. It's just like trying to get through the day, and that can't be it. If a person longs for Shabbat, so he could just, sleep the entire day away, the afternoon, so that's also a problem. Sleep is good, but we work 6 days, not that we should sleep on the seventh, but that on the seventh we should do what we really want to do, what our soul impels us to do. Apropos which reminds me of a famous story of the Kutzker Rebbe. He was asked why he didn't write a sefer. He never wrote anything, the Kutzker Rebbe. Mm-hmm. You've heard of the Kutzker Rebbe? At least Kotzke, I heard of it. It's a town in Poland. All right. It's not in Poland anymore, it's correct. I think it's in Lithuania now. But in any event, see, he said, who am I going to write for? The Talmidei Chacham, not going to read me, all right? And then Friday night, so a simple Jew is going to read what I have to say. So he comes home from shul, and he has his meal, the meal of the week, Friday night, Leil Shabbat, all right? He with his family, he's not going to read my sefer. Then he goes to sleep, gets ready for shul. And then finally, he finishes meal, Shabbat afternoon, and he sits and he says, all right, let me open up the sefer, the Kutzker Rebbe, see what he has to say. So he sits down in his chair, opens up the sefer, and within 3 minutes, he falls asleep, and the sefer drops to the ground. He said, for that I should write a sefer? That's why he never wrote. But that's a mentality. People want to rest. They want to recover. They want to save their energy from, let's say, Shabbat. By the way, is sleep mutar on Shabbat? Of course. Shena b'Shabbat tanug. But is a person allowed to sleep on Shabbat to prepare for an activity Matzei Shabbat? Of course not. It's achana. But in fact, is a total denigration of what Shabbat is. Because then you're making Shabbat the essence. You're making Shabbat the means to what you perceive as the essence, what your late night Matzei Shabbat activity is going to be. The Jew has a different self-perception on Shabbat. That's the story of Yankel the Porter. The Jew walks taller on Shabbat, stands taller. The simplest Jew always felt on Shabbat like a prince. Look at the Shabbat table in even the poorest Jewish home. Neirot, Chalot, Yayin, family, the best food. Some Jews can only afford meat or chicken on Shabbat. Clothing, Kavod Shabbat, Oneg Shabbat. It's the holiest day of the year, but we're told to enjoy, to indulge. Food, rest, other drink, other types of endeavors. It really is an oasis from the rest of the week, an oasis from the world as well. And in terms of the family, I always found it's the ideal time to bond with family. There are no distractions. There's no phone, there's no television, there's nothing from the outside coming. So what is a person supposed to do on Shabbat? What do you do on Shabbat? You daven, you learn, there's Oneg Shabbat, there's community, there's family, there's friends, there's a sense of peace, there's a sense of contentment, and of course, the Chazal say, it's main olam haba. It's the essence of the world to come. Meaning the world to come is a day without the physical. So once you get rid of the food and the drinks, without Shabbat, etc., what do you have? You have a day of tefillin, Talmud Torah. That already is main olam haba. It's a day that's devoted to Dat Hashem. So just to summarize, you have Shabbat. A mechalel Shabbat is one who denies God, denies everything. It's ke'ilu kofer b'chol haTorah kula. That's why it's the definitive characteristic of a Jew. A shomer Shabbat, conversely, is the one who accepts God, who grasps what God wants from us, what the purpose of life is, especially the pleasure that God wants us to have in life. Matana tova yeshli b'vekon azai. It's a great gift to enjoy life in all its aspects, a life that's lived in His service. And I have no doubt, I have no empirical evidence, just anecdotal evidence, I have no doubt that people observe Shabbat on the highest level, as it's meant to, both with Isur Malacha and the positive mitzvot, minagim, etc., and understand the philosophy of Shabbat and turn it into a positive day. They're really the happiest people, the happiest Jews, and their families benefit as well. That's what we talk about. Shabbat is the crown of the week, the crown of the Jew. That's why Shabbat Shalom. Shalom, not only in the sense of peace, but in the sense of completion, in the sense of harmony as well. All right, it's already Thursday. I can wish you all Shabbat Shalom to everyone.